talk about the Greens, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
Yeah. It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Green.
There's growing concern among business owners tonight. Well, there's growing concern.
Now concern is growing.
Our generations are standing on a precipice, staring into a void whose depth science does not know yet.
Hey, and welcome to Growing Concern. My name's Sean Marsh, and this is a podcast for the unapologetically purpose-driven. It's for those of you out there making a difference, shaking things up, and not taking no for an answer. It's also for anyone curious enough to see things from a different perspective. These episodes are designed for you and I to learn as we go. We'll be discussing some big challenges with inspiring people and figuring out what we can do to solve them. Every so often, I'll drop an episode that's just me sanding back the greenwash on dirty industries and sharing my thoughts on branding and strategy for ethical organisations. The crowd around me bustles. An air of eager anticipation moves throughout the room. For a brief moment, the lights dim. When they're brought back up, we see a person standing in front of us in the centre of a round red carpet. The room is still. The speaker starts to talk. The attendees soak up each and every word. This is the influence storytelling has over us. This is the undeniably influential power of the spoken word. If you haven't guessed it yet, I'm talking about TED. TED is a non-profit devoted to spreading ideas in the form of short, powerful talks. TED Talks are internationally revered. Most people have watched at least one. But how and why does it work? Many academics tell us that we're biologically hardwired to need storytelling. It's a part of our DNA. Studies show that oxytocin is released when we engage in positive social interactions. It creates trust and connects us as social and emotional beings. Others speculate that stories ensured our survival as a species. Language evolved as a way for us to warn each other of danger and pass down important lessons to future generations. TED takes one of the most fundamental aspects of what it is to be human and uses it to better the world. In this episode of Growing Concern, I chat with a guy who understood that TED was the perfect opportunity to spread awareness of climate change through the simple act of storytelling. Here's what went down.
My name is Juan Villani. I'm an ex-management consultant, angel investor, entrepreneur, and mentor. And I'm a TEDx organizer.
Hey Juan, thank you so much for joining me today. Excited to talk to you about all things event organizing, TEDx, climate change, mentoring for entrepreneurs. You seem to run the full gamut of lots of things. So keen to pick your brain today. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me. Very excited.
So let's just kick it off. You've got a few notches on your belt in terms of career. High level, where have you come from and what are you doing now?
Cool. So I'm originally from Colombia. I studied industrial engineering. I'm not an engineer at all, but I studied it. And then I started my career in investment banking for a short time, then jumped to management consulting, moved to a couple of countries. And about 3.5 years ago, I decided to move to Australia. where I launched my own consulting firm, Independent Consulting, and then decided to go back into entrepreneurship and mentoring startups and start investing in them as well. So I joined a solar company for a while as a corporate director, and then I decided to keep on my investing and start organizing TED and looking for new investments.
So from South America to Australia.
Yeah.
And now TEDx.
Yeah, pretty much.
Squat the trip, man. A question I like to ask most people is, because I want to know what sort of drives them, but what concerns you most right now?
That's a good question. Look, I consider myself a deep thinker, which means I sometimes, you know, connect dots that are not so obvious. So today, probably my deepest concern is how humankind is not understanding when enough is enough. And that's driving climate change, and that's driving inequality, and it's driving probably mental health issues as well. It's, you know, maybe the root of all evils.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And why do you think that is?
Well, there is a historical component on it, right? Freeman said that companies should maximize their profits, and that's everything that they have to do. And we took that to heart. So companies are just maximizing their profits instead of thinking, and it's not all companies, right? But instead of thinking of social welfare or environmental welfare, they're just trying to make more money, which is not always wrong, but could sometimes lead to the kind of crisis that we're living today, like mental crisis and climate change and everything else.
Yeah. I guess if you're like a worker, like an employee for a business, and they are solely for profit, what is your purpose for doing the work there? You know, I mean, obviously you'll find meaning in work, but at the end of the day, it's for the profits of the owners of the business, right?
So absolutely. That's what drives me to be an entrepreneur. From really young age, I kind of grasped that concept. And I understand that you gain things from work, like experience, which is really important, contacts and a social life, you know, and maybe a sense of purpose. But for me, it's always been better to try and do your own stuff and try to launch your own projects or collaborate with things that have a lot of purpose as well.
So you blazing your own trail, is that because you just see things that are broken and you just have to fix them?
Yeah, I think so. I'm also dyslexic, which means I connect dots that are not traditionally connected. Mm-hmm. And I just see things, and for me, it makes no sense why they are doing like that. You know, it just made no sense. So I just kind of do it differently.
Some people might consider that a bit of a burden, but it sounds like you see it as a superpower.
I think it's a superpower. It does come with consequences, right? I'm not the best reader. You know, when you are in, I don't know, third grade or fourth grade, and the teacher is saying, all right, you, Juan, you will read the next piece. Well, that was really terrifying because I'm not a great reader. I wasn't a great reader. Now I read a lot, but, you know, it took some years to overcome the blurries of the words in the text.
Yeah. You speak two languages quite well. And do you speak any more than that?
Yeah, I do speak Portuguese and a little bit of Japanese as well.
You could easily say to be a little bit dyslexic in one language is fine, but you can do multiple languages.
Yeah.
You're well ahead of the rest, mate. That's Japanese, that's cool.
It is really hard. It's just a little, right? I traveled to Japan maybe 2 years ago, and one of the things that I read was most people there are really helpful, but they are not fluent in English or any other language, so it would be good to have the basics. So I studied by myself with Duolingo and a couple of things, and then meet Japanese friends here for like 4 months. So I had like survival Japanese.
Yeah, it's the best way to learn anything, really, just like full immersion.
Yeah.
I learned Polish fluently when I was living there because I had to.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't order food or get a bus unless I knew how to ask for it properly.
Well, that was how I learned Portuguese as well, right? So I got my first job in management consulting in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. And the managing director told me, no worries, you don't have to learn Portuguese. You will be working everywhere else in South America, so you will be working in Spanish, and everyone in the office speak English. So with your two languages, you're fine. I was like, all right, that's cool. I got to Brazil. 3 weeks later, this guy's gone, and the new managing director sit down and says, all right, you will have to learn Portuguese because we're not selling anything anywhere else in South America, so we'll pay you for some lessons, but you need to learn. And you will think Portuguese and Spanish are very similar, which they kind of are, but not to a working level at all.
Really?
It was really, really hard 4 months of my life.
That's nuts. So you'd moved there, which is hard enough as it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, by the way.
Exactly. So, yeah, just for context, I was 21. Was my first time, my first job, my first real job after uni. Was the first time living alone, because in South America you live with your parents until you know, have enough money to pay your own things, or you get a job outside of the country. Mm-hmm. So first time living alone, new country, new language that I didn't speak. So it was quite tough.
I'm very impressed. I'll tell you that much. I want to know, what gets you out of bed every day?
That's a good question. I'm really happy with my life today. So I don't need a lot of, you know, energy to get out of bed, but I do feel that that is because I have a lot of purpose in, I see a lot of purpose in what I'm doing. So I'm either, you know, today I'm teaching for entrepreneurs some classes with a university, which I really enjoy. I've never been a teacher. I've been a guest speaker and a mentor, but this is the first time teaching like 4-hour classes, and I really enjoy. If I'm not doing that, I'm mentoring or, you know, catching up with the startups that I invested in, which is really interesting because I'm helping them solve their problems and all these things without the stress and without the, you know, not sleeping and all these problems that come with running a business, which is really cool.
The mindset is weird in the at the moment. I think it's, you can see it on Instagram posts where it's like, gets up at 5 a.m., does X, Y, Z before breakfast up until like midnight, do it again. That's success. Like that's a, I think
that's crazy.
It's crazy. It's upside down. Like,
yeah. Look, I was thinking about that actually today, earlier today. And I used to be like that because investment banking and management consulting kind of requires you to do it. But for me, at least, it made me miserable. Like it's really not a sustainable way of living.
No.
I enjoy a lot my life. I enjoy my life a lot better today where I have time to think about things and, you know, I can organize an event and I can invest and I can talk to people and I'm busy. Yes, I have a lot of things to do, but I'm never really busy. Meaning, you know, I am happy to get a meeting from one day to the next one or a coffee with friends or a chat or anything that I really want to do. I can do it. Probably the same day, not most of the time because I have my days quite structured, but if not the same day, the next day.
So let's talk about TEDx. How did this happen and why climate change is a topic?
Well, I've always think that climate change is one of the main problems of the world, right? We all know it. It took some time for some people to get there, but now we most of us know it. Why TEDx came as an opportunity to me. So TED, the Global TED, is organizing the Countdown Initiative, which is an event that is going to happen in the US the 10th of October, focused on climate change. And they wanted, I subscribed myself to just attend the event, but then they wanted people with enough experience to organize TEDx events across the globe that will happen on the same week. So I decided to apply and it actually took a little bit of time. I got the license maybe 5 weeks ago, which is an interesting spot to be in because I had no team, no nothing, right? So you, here's your license. Good luck. You're the lead organizer and everything depends on you. And, you know, you have, I don't know, 2-3 months to organize it. Yeah, it was quite funny and a great moment in time, if I may add.
I guess it's one of those things you have to just put yourself out there and pitch for some opportunities and then figure it out once you've got them, right?
Exactly.
Otherwise, you'll never start, you know?
You're exactly right.
I, I'm really keen to know though, like, I can sort of see how the TEDx and the Countdown stuff sort of ties in. Mm. But for you personally with climate change, when did that happen? What was the seminal moment where you were like, oh, wow, I gotta be a part of this somehow?
Probably when I moved here to Australia. Because, you know, in Colombia, we do have climate change, right? This is a global issue. But back in Colombia, I was working with different non-for-profits and different things, mainly poverty. Right? When you are in a developing country, you see poverty as the main issue for everything, right? For corruption and, you know, it's difficult for the country. So I was working there for that rather than climate change, even though I knew climate change was a huge issue. When you move here, you know, there is poverty in Australia, yes, but I feel more inspired to work on climate change. And it's a topic that I've been wanting to contribute for a while. And this was a great opportunity.
You had some experience with the solar startup as well, right?
Yeah.
Was that your first job when you came to Australia?
No, it wasn't. No, my first job was actually with a university. I was the senior business analyst. It was super boring. And then I launched my personal consulting firm when I got clients like Woolies and some other big clients to help them with the strategy. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was mentoring on the side. And when I left Woolies, which was my last client, I decided, all right, I want to mentor and I want to meet and invest in companies that are related to climate change because I think it's time for industry to come and, you know, make a change. So I started looking for companies that I could mentor or invest, and I came across the startup that I worked with where I was. When I pitched to mentor the CEO, he explained me the situation they were, where they were and everything. So I said, right, let me join you as a, you know, as a consultant, and we can work something together. I could help you, you know, define your strategy. I could help you with your commercials. I can help you with your business models and financial models and everything else. So I joined as a corporate director for 6 months and helped them go to next level.
So no doubt that's a fairly profitable career, and leaving that to now help other entrepreneurs and then do events like the TEDx event that's coming up.
Yeah.
It must have been a big decision, or was it easy to make that leap?
It was actually not that hard. I mean, I'm going to miss the money. Yes, of course, I'm going to miss the money. But sure. It ties up with what we were talking at the beginning, right? When enough is enough. If you have enough money and you're super happy and you'll have time to do everything that you want and you can explore your passions and you can bring into the world change and great things, what else do you need? Do you really need, you know, $300,000 a year? Really? I mean, it's nice, of course. But sure, do you need that kind of money? No, you don't need it, right? Especially if you don't have a life, especially if you don't have you don't have great relationships, especially if your health is starting to decay because you're not resting enough. These kind of things, for me at least, at this stage, is not worth it. And I don't have kids yet, so imagine that.
I mean, I've met plenty of people over the years that have been solely dedicated to their income and their entire working lives was spent working.
Yeah.
I don't know if they ever really saw an issue with that. And I think it'll hit you later in life.
Absolutely.
You will come to terms with the fact that perhaps there could have been more fulfilling things. You know, like that comfort level, I agree 100%, you know, getting to that point and then saying, that's enough. Like this is sufficient for me.
Yeah.
What else can I put back out into the world, right?
Yeah. And look, if you're following your passion and you're doing the right things, when you're following your passion and you're helping others, magic will happen. I choose to believe that, right? Mm-hmm. And magic for me in this case means you will attract the right people, you will attract the right contacts, you will do the right things, and money will probably follow, whether you want it or not. The truth is, when you see most people, there are two types of billionaires out there, right? There are the bad kind of billionaires who kind of steal the money and are doing horrible things to the world.
Which put it their island accounts.
Yeah, exactly. Let's ignore those. And then you have the real interesting billionaires who are those who created passionate things and created great things for the world. And, you know, I'm not striving to be a billionaire. it's not something that I have as a goal. If it happens, it will be amazing, but but if you follow the same rule and you say, all right, let's do what I'm passionate about, let's do what I want to do, let's bring the things that I want to see in the world, and you know, you're patient, magic will happen. I choose to believe that.
I absolutely agree. If you think about any decent business model, if you have a quality product or service and you're doing good things, inevitably people will want that.
Yeah.
Whatever that might be. With the whole billionaires thing, that's actually a pretty good segue, because I came across this thing today. Mark Spencer shared it with me. It was a climate scientist making a tweet in reference to people who make a lot of money. And so I'll read this out. It's from Peter Kalmus, who's a climate scientist, writer, and activist based in California. His status is, I will never have a TEDx talk because what I have to say is too vulgar and threatening to the status quo, which is that climate and ecosystems are fucking breaking irreversibly, and it's because corporations and billionaires are fucking in charge. Thanks for coming, blah, blah, blah. I know that it's like a very bleak statement, but it comes from a guy who knows what he's talking about. Is this sort of like this ruling class establishment kind of thing, something you're hoping to address in a TED Talk, or is that kind of something that's off limits?
Look, it's a little bit off limits because in TED, what is really important is the idea, right? What we really want is ideas worth spreading, and want to flourish them and get them to the public. And that means that if you want your idea to be worth spreading, it has to be about giving something to the public, giving a gift to the world. That's an idea worth spreading. And that immediately translated to the fact that you cannot have commercial or political or religious agendas if you want to give a TEDx talk or a TED talk overall. And I know it's been really difficult because climate change could be a political issue sometimes, but we are going to maintain the line anyway. There is a difference between going out and saying, this is what we need to do and this is what the government should focus on, versus going and saying the people in power are the ones who are to blame or something like that. There is a fine line and we're not going to cross it. And that's a great segue to saying this event is not going to be that. It's not going to be political. It's not going to be anything like that. It's just great ideas that will inspire you and are going to be actionable for you to help us change climate change. That is what we're looking for.
I think having those lines drawn clearly does help keep the quality of TEDx content very, very much at a high level.
Yeah.
And also, I think when it comes to critiquing the ruling class, I think there's like 10 companies in the world responsible for most of the carbon emissions in the world, right?
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to these ideas in TEDx and TED Talks in general, is empowering people en masse to then take their money out of those companies and hit them where it hurts most, right? So it's like in, what is it, A Bug's Life, when the ants realize that they outnumber the cockroaches or the crickets. That's how I kind of see it. And I certainly hope that this event really does shake a couple of assumptions on what individuals can do to enact change, right?
100%. I don't want to spoil any of the talks, but we do have a lot of different subjects, from food to finances to health to a lot of subjects and a lot of great things coming. And we have a variety of speakers as well, right? Sometimes people think about TED or climate change and they imagine this super boring scientist that is gonna beat you to death with statistics, right? It's not gonna be like that. We have a couple of scientists and we're working really closely with them. We're coaching them so they have great or better speaking skills by then, or better talk. But we do have life coaches and lifestyle people and people who are gonna get you excited about a lot of things, get you worried about other things, and a lot of actionable things to do as well. A lot of things that you can do just there and have a great impact.
I love an actionable step. Love it. It's like, I mean, there are a lot of things that get put out there in the world and it rebounds with that whole fear-mongering conjecture kind of stuff. But I think that if we have problem X, here is a potential solution to that, you know, and we need to be doubling up on that sort of messaging. And I feel really bad for the climate scientists out there. They dedicate their lives to this stuff. I saw a funny video on TikTok. He's an epidemiologist, right? Like, he studies viruses and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he, long story short, essentially, like, he knows how it feels now to be a climate scientist. he's standing in the shower screaming, like. Let's talk about, like, the setup of the event. Did you know anything about event planning before this?
Well, not exactly. But the way I see it is just when you're, it's like launching a new product, right? You need to research how to do it, then you need to put a plan, and then you need to execute it. One step at a time, focusing on what you would call the MVP, which is the minimum viable product or minimum viable event, if you want, which is what is the minimum things that we need to have in place for it to be okay, which will be, you know, a venue, maybe catering, the speakers, DAB, so important, right? Especially for a TED event. A website, some live stream, you know, the host, the minimum things that you really need to get in place. And once you get that, you can start adding things that you feel are cool. So that was how I initially planned it, pretty much.
And you've only, 4 to 5 weeks, right?
Yeah, 5 weeks.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, look, I cannot take all the credit at all. It would not have been possible without my team. I was really, really lucky. So I called a friend of mine and I told him, all right, I need to tell you something. I was like, what's going on? I'm like, I just got a TEDx license and I have maybe 2.5 or 3 months to organize this. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be able. And he was like, you know what? This makes me crazy. I really want to do this. This blows my mind. I'm joining you immediately. So I got my co-organizer. And then I started looking for, you know, I need someone in AB to help me. And I met this amazing lady that she really got into the role of organizing the AB. And then turns out she had great PR experience as well. So she's helping with PR and she's doing such a great job. And then the same happened with the designer. And then we had a social media manager or, you know, community manager joining. And it just kind of grew and grew, and they are all doing amazing jobs and helping me a lot.
This is what happens when you have something that's just such a purpose-driven concept, and people will gravitate to it, right?
Exactly. I think it goes to the magic that I was talking to, right? If you have a purpose and if you're passionate about it and if you just, you know, wake up and do it and keep doing it, magic will happen. The right people will come to you by your side. Not the right investors or the right team members or the right companies might come as well. And things will kind of just happen as long as you're there.
What have you learned from this, and what would you say to somebody? What sort of advice would you give them if this is something that they would, maybe someone else listening has just been given a TEDx license for, I don't know, Adelaide or something.
Yeah. Look, if you have a project, a crazy project with a short period of time, whether it's a TED talk, another event, a podcast, or whatever you want to do, the first thing that you need to do is surround yourself with the right people. And that is, obviously, I'm referring to my team, but that is also your friends. Who are you spending your time with? I heard there is a quote from someone that I don't remember, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's, you're the average of the 5 person you spend the most time with. So make sure to pick the right 5 people that are going to be with you, because you're going to be the average of those 5. So pick people who will empower you. Pick people who you will say, look, I have this problem. I don't know how to organize an event and I have 3 months, and will jump and say, I will do whatever it takes. I'm going to be with you. Let's do it, right? Pick people who you can go and say, all right, I need AB, and then they will come up with you and do PR and do everything else, right? And, you know, my girlfriend has been super supportive across all my projects all my life. Not all my life, but the 8 years that we've been together. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just surround yourself with the right people and then have the passion to drive it.
It's good advice because the reverse is true, yeah? You know, if you surround yourself with people that suck your energy or put you down or don't lift you up and don't support your ideas,
yeah.
Then I like the you're the average of your friends kind of thing. I think that's very good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does the TED brand bring to the table in 2020 in the context of there's a need for action on climate crisis? Do you think TED is uniquely positioned to do something about it?
I think so, yeah. And I think that's why it's also so important to not cross the line between the purity of the ideas and kind of the activist, let's scream at the government kind of thing. And it's when we have TED, we bring new ideas and we bring it in a platform that is probably the best out there to get people to understand your ideas and to change their thought patterns and their behaviors. Right. There are certain publics that are great for activists that go and scream and do things. And that's awesome. There are others that they are not getting to. And the problem is when you go and scream to a CEO of an oil company that he is devil, he's not going to hear, right? He doesn't want to be alienated. Versus if there is a great talk in TED Talk, he may listen to it and he may start thinking, maybe his choices are not the best and he may consider doing something different. So I feel it's a platform that will help us get to a lot of different people. Of course, the ideas will resonate with anyone who knows and supports the idea that climate change is obviously real and that are doing things about it. But we hope to get to people who are maybe not as clear as that. That's one piece. And the other piece is we also can use this platform for inspiring change in a lot of people. So there's also the fact that some of us are having great changes and have done changes before, but now there are more things that we can do, right? There are more options. Like, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but yeah, there are things that we can change that you probably are not aware of and that will help a lot.
I really, really want you to spoil some of them.
That was a close one. I was very, very...
Yeah. You know what's good, though? It's just like I'm even more excited now.
That's the point, right? Part of the criteria for the speakers that we're selecting, and it's not just TEDx Darlinghurst, it's everywhere in the world, is we don't want to show more science about climate change because we know... climate change. Science is out there. We don't need to put any more of that out there. That's the other piece that is really important for the event, right? This is not, don't think you're going to get there to hear what catastrophe will happen if you go to 1.5. Do you want to know? Go Google it. It's super easy, right? We know that's true. The science is there and it's been there for a while, for over 100 years. What we're doing here is bringing ideas to change climate change. So when you think about TED, we'll always fact check everything. They will always present good science. That's why they created this event, right? They know the science is real and the crisis is here and we need to do something. And they decided to use their platform to do it, which I think is a brilliant move, by the way.
I'm a bit of like a scientific materialist. Like I'm not a very spiritual kind of guy, but then I watched a philosopher talk about like what is consciousness.
Yeah.
And there's no real way for us to scientifically measure consciousness, and it kind of blew my mind. And then talk about like if you transplanted some part of a brain to someone else, are they you now, are they not you? And anyway, long story short is that like it really just flipped my perception of this sort of stuff upside down, and that's what TED does.
Yeah.
And so for them not to touch climate change as a you know, offer ideas and solutions would be kind of not really on brand for TED.
Yeah, I agree. And the other piece is, you know, every time I don't know if you're a designer, you probably know this, but there are some designers and some publicists and some strategists that will always tell you, don't go into the hot topics, right? Don't go into politics. Don't go into this. Don't go into that because it's hot topics and you will alienate people. But then you end up with a world full of brands that are unauthentic, that don't stand for anything, right? Which is where we are pretty much. If you keep on following that, then you won't alienate anyone. But then how are you going to compete with the biggest brands who have billions and billions of dollars to, you know, associate themselves with happiness or whatever other general concept that we all want to feel, right? You need to stand, I'm not saying go be super politically active or anything like that, but if you have a belief, your company should reflect it, both in their marketing, in their actions, in, you know, how you hire, who you hire, all this. How else are you going to bring change into the world if we need to be completely sterile in everything that we say and everything that we do?
Yeah, there is a massive change in terms of brand strategy at the moment with businesses taking a stand on certain things because it differentiates them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the real reason they're doing it, but if you just sort of sit on the fence, you're a bit of a boring entity.
Absolutely.
Like, why would I? Brands aren't like something that you use. It's something that you're a part of.
Yeah.
You know, like with Apple, for example, like, as much as some of the stuff bugs me, I just can't not use their products. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to say, well, I mean, it's probably a bad example because I don't do a whole lot for the world other than make shiny toys.
Yeah. But they stand for something, right? They stand for creativity. They stand for, you know, being unique, which is funny because they only have one cell phone at a time, one computer at a time, and you're being unique, but yeah, doesn't matter. Yeah. They stand for something, and they're very, very clear on that. And I don't know if they still reflect it today, but obviously Jobs was the incarnation of what he was talking about in the brand. And so he brought all his personality into the brand, and that's what made it successful. So if you are, you know, a small or a medium or a big company, and you're still guiding yourself by the don't go into hot topics kind of thing, don't be, you know, don't push any buttons, then you're boring.
Yep. Totally. You'll become obsolete because no one's going to care. If someone loves you, that's cool. If someone hates you, that's also fine.
Yeah.
But if they're apathetic, that's a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And haters,
I really don't care.
You know, haters could be great promoters as well.
You need equal on both sides. Like,
it's very counterintuitive, but haters are great promoters, you know.
So. Hug the haters, man.
Yeah, hug the haters.
Hey, I wanted to know, obviously there's a lot of nations in the world that have heavily adopted renewables and climate targets and stuff. Australia is typically so far behind, and yet we have so much amazing land for solar and wind.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of denialism here. Have you encountered much of that since arriving in business and just in general in society?
Not really, but
interesting.
I sometimes feel that the fear of Australians around the change into a more sustainable way of living comes out of the fear of losing the edge that they have, like the mining edge that Australia has, or all these other stuff that we could have. And I think it's a matter of the ones who are promoting the change to make a better case and explain why this is actually better for the country, you know, for everyone, not just in terms of, you know, we're not going to pollute your lungs anymore, which is, you know, kind of important because health is important. It's around also, you know, there's going to be great amount of jobs. There's going to be great amount of infrastructure being developed. We're going to be able to export a lot more. There are plans that I've seen about, you know, switching to be a powerhouse in renewable energy and then exporting the energy, which is funny because we are a huge island, but they're planning on building the cables to export the electricity. You know, all these things, it's just a matter of communicating them effectively and to the right people, which is part of what we're doing, TEDx. There's not going to be a talk about that because that's something that I read somewhere else, but there are other changes that people are afraid of, and we hope to explain them in a way that make perfect sense, especially because they're not going to come tainted with any political or anything that could be controversial for you. This is just an idea, and this is a platform for ideas.
Absolutely. I mean, there's already like organizations that are pushing stuff like this, like Beyond Zero Emissions with their Million Jobs Plan.
Yeah.
You've seen that, I assume.
Yes.
And then there's that whole discussion around the just transition, which is, we know we need to do this. How do we do it so no one gets left behind?
Mm-hmm.
And typically detractors of change, they worry about security in jobs, in life, and yada yada yada. But if we were to set up a process and say, well, you were previously coal miner, now we're going to retrain you to work on solar farms or whatever it might be, and say you've got a secure job, and if not, more jobs, because these stranded assets, we built a coal-fired power plant that we will only last X amount of years, whereas this solar farm or whatever it is going to last indefinitely. We just touch it up. Yep. That's the kind of conversations we need to be having.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And look, I know the change from the political end and high-level macroeconomics are difficult and takes a long time because people get scared about these things, right? But the right way of doing it is by pushing the ideas into the world and by explaining to people one person at a time or one conference at a time or whatever it is at a time until you get enough mass to make a change, which is another thing that academia sometimes don't understand, right? They proved climate change a long time ago. Why did it took so long for it to actually be a crisis and, you know, have actionable things going on? Because they thought that what they needed was to explain it to a super detailed level and just keep pushing for more and more science, more and more data, more and more things. But that's not necessarily true. Yeah, of course, if you don't have enough data, if you don't have enough proof of something, then it's okay, you need more, right? You definitely need more. But if you have enough, what you really need to do is take these into the public in a manner that everyone will understand, and then explain it to the politicians and explain it to the companies and explain it to everyone that you can in a manner that they understand, in a way that they will understand and they will support, so you can generate change. And that's one of the main problems, right? The people who have the kind of skills to do that are not usually scientists. So scientists do need help, and society needs to kind of fall back in love with scientists and understand what they're saying and trust them, because they are not there to make money. They're not there. They sometimes are wrong, but it's so off case. Like 1 out of 100, they're wrong. And the other 9, and when they're wrong, it's because they had new information and they were a little bit wrong. But the other 99, they're just telling the truth, you know? That's science.
I really wish we could normalize changing our opinions when presented with new information.
Oh, yeah.
Because right now, with scientists are treated the same way as politicians. The scientific method is, here's what we know now, and a couple of months later, oh, actually, this contradicts that. Now we know a little bit more, so it's this.
Yeah.
Which is life, right?
Yeah.
Now you know so much more than you did 5 years ago, and you probably look back and cringe, go, ah, so wrong doing whatever that
Absolutely,
was.
Absolutely, yeah.
But people somehow, you know, if a politician says one thing, it's like, we'll hold you to it. It's a mandate. We have to do it. But, you know, life shouldn't be that way. It should be an evolution.
Yeah.
You know, we say we want to try this thing out. It didn't work, but it did, or maybe it did work. And then,
yeah,
it's interesting, this psychological thing that's going on with people.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I wonder if it's because of what you said around there's so much information, it's hard to really grab a chunk and say that's something tangible I need to know.
Yeah.
But I mean, in my previous, you know, work, I know that just charts, just poor people, and they don't, no one wants to see another pie chart based on like emissions and XYZ. They want someone to say, this is what the reality is. That's not something that's a problem now. This is a problem now. This is what we can do about it.
Yeah. And look, it cost me as well, right? So I come from management consulting where everything you do is a chart, right? Everything you present is in a chart with a beautiful title and all this. And that's a way that has been developed to persuade executives, right? And give them the tools to explain their decisions and stuff like that. But that really doesn't work on the public. And it took me a while. My first company, I had a designer there who was helping me, and he was like, yeah, no charts. That's not going to work. And I was like, but he's super clear. No, he's not. No, it's not. Not really.
So, it might be clear, but it's just not persuasive.
Exactly. It might be clear, but it's not really what you want to put out there.
So good. Hey, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I want to invite everyone who is listening to attend the event. It's the 15th of October, starts at 5 p.m. It's going to be in the Maritime Museum in Sydney, but we're going to be live streaming it for free. Tickets are going to be available soon, so stay watching closely to get them. And it's going to be very, very inspiring and very entertaining as well.
I can't wait.
Me neither.
Fantastic. Hey, Juan, thank you so much for chatting with us, and we wish you all the best with the event. It sounds like, I mean, you've got this quiet confidence about you that I think you're going to smash it out of the park. So I'm excited for you and stoked that you've decided to do this. So good luck, mate, and thanks for joining me today.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for having me and for the great conversation.
Likewise.
Just a couple of hours after we wrapped up our chat, Juan left me a voicemail about what they're doing with their TEDx sign and who to reach out to talk about it.
Oh, Sean, and by the way, I forgot to mention something important. Instead of doing our TEDx sign from some virgin material like foam or wood, we decided to partner with our friends at Reverse Garbage to create a creative upcycle sign. It will look great and have zero impact.
So it turns out that Eve Brennan, a fellow podcaster on the Climactic Network, was building the sign herself. So I decided to jump on a call and find out what's going on.
Hey, Eve. How you going?
I'm good, thanks, Marshy. How are you?
I'm excellent. We haven't really properly met, so this is like just straight out the gates.
Yeah, only Slack conversations.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think I'm like one of the few people that actually has like a profile photo in there.
You know, so I'm
like, I don't even know what people look like. And if someone does have a profile photo, it's like, I don't know, like an anime character or something like that.
Yeah, it's their like avatar or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hey, I've just recently had a bit of a chat with Juan Bajani. You know all about him. He's kicking off this TEDx talk in Darlinghurst, all about climate change. And so it seemed fitting that he would address that with that TED sign that we're all familiar with, the big red letters. And I didn't really realize after we finished the chat, we thought, hang on, we haven't talked about your input into this. You have made the sign yourself from recycled materials.
Yeah. So I work at Reverse Garbage. So we're using reuse materials to make the sign. A lot of the stuff that we have is actually more excess materials than reuse. So it's industrial waste that we've got from factories and a lot of textile houses and stuff around Reverse Garbage that we collect. Their excess material and make into new things. So that's what I'm making for the TEDx sign, from all the bits and bobs that no one wanted, but we love to get crafty with, really.
What other projects do you do with Reverse Garbage?
I'm an educator. So What we do is we get kids mostly, but also the general public, to engage with the waste hierarchy in a really practical and fun way. So for those that don't know, the waste hierarchy is the way that we should relate to stuff in a way that means that we waste as little as possible. So it's reduce, reuse, recycle, incinerate, and then landfill is the broad way. And then so we target reduce and reuse mostly. And in the reuse area, we show people how to get super creative and just embrace just like having a go and making something imperfect, but they're going to value it because they made it.
That's cool.
And so, yeah.
That's real cool. So what sort of materials are you using and reducing and reusing and recycling for the TED?
If you know the TEDx logos, it's like a red TEDx and then a white location of the TEDx. So for the red, the base is actually from a banner. It's lino that's used for a typical banner that someone threw out 2 meters of. And so I went, excellent. It's a vibrant red, which is perfect for TED.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah.
And then I am sewing on a bunch of red bottle caps of our company that shall remain nameless. That is iconic.
But in some ways, it isn't now. It's like saying he who shall not be named. We all know who we're talking about.
We know exactly who. Well, and I'm pretty sure they might have trademarked red bottle caps. So it's like actually illegal for anyone else.
It's crazy. It's like if Cadbury can trademark a purple.
Yeah.
I mean, what's next?
Yeah.
So red bottle caps to add extra red, yeah?
Yeah, to texture it, and then buttons, and I've cut up some jewellery that someone threw out and used the red beads through it as well, and I'm embroidering all of that. And then for the Darlinghurst, which is white, I'm crocheting all of those thick reused plastic bags that no one ever reuses, those ones. I'm crocheting all of them together.
You're crocheting them?
Yeah.
Can I see what it looks like? Do you have anything near you that you
actually don't have it at here? Okay. I've broken my leg, so I can't walk and get it. Yeah.
when did this happen? I love it how we just gotten this far and you're like, oh, by the way, I've broken my leg.
I've broken my leg. That actually happened 2.5 months ago now, and I still can't walk.
Oh, no.
So plenty of time for craft.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How big is this going to be?
So all up, it's going to be nailed onto a door. So it had to be between 2 and 2.5 meters. And people throw out a lot of doors when they demolish houses, and when they don't like old looking doors, they throw them out. So we're going to take a big strip of black fabric, sew the TED and the Darlinghurst onto it, and then
prop it up.
Nail it onto a door and then prop it up. Yeah.
Yeah, right. One mentioned that you said, do you know where you're going to store this after? He didn't know.
Yes. No.
So you made this like modular, right? So it could be used again?
Yes. So hopefully it's door size. So hopefully it fits in a shed or can just be propped up against something in a room and be used again next year.
You know what? Reuse, and reuse again. We'll see how many of these events we can kick out, right?
Exactly.
how far are you along? When do you think you'll get it done?
So in terms of if you're putting into sound, I've done TET and I've done Darlinghurst.
Yep. You know what? I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
I've done TET and Darling. Yeah. I love that. That's so good. Yeah.
So there you go. I'd say that's probably 2/3 of the way there.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Very cool. So, I mean, it's not long now, right, to the actual event.
No. When you're handcrafting something.
Crocheting all those bags. I was actually hoping you could, if you had someone on hand, we could get you scrunching them up, you know, now that we're sonically describing things.
Yes.
Anything else you want to tell us about your construction? Any tips and tricks for anyone crocheting their own paper bags at home?
So one thing that I've learned about upcycling skills that you cannot underestimate is grannies on YouTube. Go and look. They've got so many skills and they're pretty straightforward. I am an artist, but I'm not trained as an artist. I trained as a scientist. They're just like things that you can learn in like an afternoon and get the hang of and give it a go.
Cool.
To have your say in future episodes of Growing Concern, visit seanmarshdesign.com.au and leave me a voicemail. Tell me what concerns you most, any lessons you'd like to share, or questions you think I should put to my guests down the track. Growing Concern is supported and co-produced by the Climactic Collective, an Australian podcast network for the climate community. Music, production, and editing by me. If you dig what this podcast is all about, please take a second to click that subscribe or follow button in whatever podcast app you're using right now. And if you're feeling particularly generous, leaving me a rating is the best chance this podcast has of getting seen by more people. Thanks for listening.